Welcome to episode 195 of Industry Misinterpretations with James Robertson and Michael Lucas Smith. This week, we're reviewing packages from the Public Store Repository again. This is part one of two. If you have feedback on this or any other episode of Industry Misinterpretations, please send it to smalltalkpodcasts@syncom.com. You can also head on over to iTunes and leave a comment for us. We would really appreciate it if you did that. You can head on over to Podcast Alley, cast a vote for the podcast. And of course, you can interact with us in the Industry Misinterpretations group of Facebook and the Small Talkers group at Ning. No, let me explain one thing. We're reviewing packages that load into VisualWorks or perhaps Object Studio 8 from the public repository again.
Just as our listeners are reviewing us, well, actually more like judging us every time we open our mouth. And that usually doesn't go well for us.
All right, so we're looking at Brace Constructor.
Yep.
And this actually was published quite a while ago. It looks like the latest publish is from 2005, so it's not new code.
This is almost like a meta review, right? See, they review us talking about stuff that some of these people that are listening to us right now have written. So it's like a symbiotic relationship there.
And now where this comes from is that Squeak, I guess, has had this for a long time, where you can construct an array using the curly braces that you would normally use in a language like Java or C or C++.
I just had a very James Robertson moment where you ignore something I say. And I would ignore something you would say, and you would just shake your head. Now, you're ignoring something I'm saying. I'm just sitting here shaking my head.
I didn't hear anything you said because it wasn't referring to me.
Oh, right.
There were other people on this podcast?
That's why you're losing your hair, right?
Yeah, it's because my brain is growing.
What? That's cancer. That's not good.
All right, well, why don't we talk a little bit about Brace Constructor then? So I explained basically what it does.
Did you? I wasn't listening. You weren't talking about that.
Yeah. So you can construct an array using curly braces. And I guess it's a convenience in terms of being able to write code without having to do something like array with. And especially considering that when you're doing an array, if you don't do the literal array construction, you can't just add things to the array easily. You have to stream to add or do other weird things.
There are a number of shortfalls with this stuff. So we're talking about convenience syntax here for creating arrays. Okay, on the face of it, seems like a pretty good idea. And many languages have the ability to do this. JavaScript in particular has square brackets to create arrays and curly braces to create what they call hashes, which is dictionaries to us. But really when it comes down to it, I think it's actually a lack of being able to name things and create named slots easily. This is a really interesting area. So imagine you can just throw together an object anytime you want with whatever slots you want. You would do that a lot. And you would then expect the VM/compiler/whatever to go through and make appropriate classes for you and optimize things and have a nice syntax for creating objects and assigning them to classes and get behavior. But more than that, sometimes you just want this sort of linear array-like thing and you want to assign to temporary variables. And many languages have the ability to specify more than one temporary variable on the left-hand side of the equals. And if you assign it to an array, it will put each of the things in the array into the different variables. So you can get multiple arguments passed back from a method. You can strip things out with a split command out of a string and assign those into variables. So there's all kinds of stuff here. And I think it all comes down to the ability to take the information in a format and get it into named slots in some other format. So it seems like this brace constructor with the syntax for creating arrays is like a step away from that. We need an easier way to construct data and handle data without having to make full-blown classes all the time. And that's what this is really about, being able to just create an array, put whatever you want in it at any time you want. But I don't think it goes far enough. I really think we should probably have this multiple assignment thing, multiple return values would be a better solution than syntax for creating an array on the fly.
You're kind of foreshadowing one of the packages you want to talk about later, aren't you?
I don't think so.
Now, there's one that you had about, what is it? It's called Bear Behavior, where you can create, you're talking about, you wanted to talk about creating classes that aren't, well, creating objects that aren't descended specifically from a class.
No, I wasn't really getting towards that, but that's an interesting point. Okay, so let's talk about this package itself. Despite the fact that I think that it's solving the wrong problem, I think that it solves it pretty well. Like, this adds new syntax to the Smalltalk language. At least in VisualWorks, it's the standard syntax in Squeak. And to do that, there are all kinds of bits and pieces that you need to get right.
I'm getting static from you now, by the way.
I don't want... What am I meant to do here, James? Stop getting static from me.
There's no static now.
Well, then it's your fault, okay?
Go ahead.
I don't know. Okay, right, so... adding new syntax to the system, there's all kinds of bits and pieces you need to put together to make that work. You've got to modify the compiler. You've got to modify the code development environment, debugger, decompiler, refactoring browser, all those bits and pieces.
Right, and that last part is the one that I got notified.
Well,
no,
okay, now before we go into your gripe here, I've seen plenty of packages that add new syntax to Smalltalk, but they don't go quite as far as this package. You know, this decompiler and analyzer actually works. Searching instance variables actually works. Auxiliary code information extractor actually works. Debugging actually works. So that's a hell of a lot more working than isn't working with this package compared to other packages that I've seen that add syntax.
Oh, yeah, no. It wasn't even really a gripe on my part. I hadn't even noticed it. It's that I did a screencast on this probably about a year ago. And I don't normally get comments on screencasts, but as soon as I put it up, I mean, I'll get people that ask me about a screencast and ask to get references to them, but I don't normally get comments in the posts. Within minutes of putting it up, somebody said, doesn't work with the refactoring browser. with the refactoring engine, rather. So it's not really a gripe on my part. It's sort of a third-party gripe. I don't even know how serious a problem it is because it's not something I've noticed.
I mean, it doesn't work with the syntax color stuff that we have as well. And this is the classic problem of we have three different parsers in the system, and I've heard the excuse, and I'm gonna put the heavy word there, that it's difficult to have one parser to find three different outputs, and I think that's a lot of crap.
Don't pull any punches there.
All right. Well, I know of plenty of other development environments that actually do it. They have one definition of the language. And then they use that one definition of the language to go and supply all the tools that they need. And I don't see why we shouldn't be able to do the same. It's just a matter of time. And obviously, it takes time to do this stuff right.
Well, is it also the case that people have built parsers to solve a particular problem, and then somebody else has gone and defined another parser to solve some other particular problem and never gone back to try to unify?
I don't know. Two of the three parsers that I talk about were written by the same people. And the third parser is the actual original Smalltalk compiler, so that doesn't, that's the real one. That's the one doing all the legwork. Then you've got the syntax one, made with SMAC, and then you've got a custom one in the RB. The RB and SMAC are all technology from two of our community's luminaries. So, I don't know. It seems like we're taking a stumbling step there.
Yeah. Well, to say good things about this package, on the other hand, it is well documented. If you look at the package comment, for instance, it gives you examples and tells you what it's good for. So, I mean, it's not a long-winded comment, but it gives you everything you need to know to get started with it. And now, a short break for David Buck's Design Minute.
This is David Buck with today's Cimbaron Design Minute. You want to assign different values to a variable depending on some condition. You can put the assignment into each part of the condition, or you could evaluate the condition and assign the result to the variable. Which is better? I normally prefer to assign the result to the variable. If you assign the result to the variable, it becomes easier to extract the conditional part into a separate method. It's clearer because you can see at the beginning of the statement that you'll be doing an assignment, so you don't have to check each block separately. it makes fewer references to the variable, so there's less to change if you need to change the variable name. It just seems cleaner to have one assignment outside the blocks than two assignments inside the blocks. This has been the Cimbron Design Minute. Cimbron offers training and consulting in object-oriented development and the Smalltalk programming language. For more information, visit www.cimbron.com or email info@cimbron.com.
And now, back to the regular podcast.
There is another package that adds extra syntax to the environment. I would like us to review that at some point, just to see how it kind of fares against, you know, in comparison to this one, which does actually work quite well.
And what's that?
It's the compile time constants, which is a syntax that exists in VA Smalltalk.
Oh, okay.
And somebody went and implemented that for VisualWorks as well. I think it's really interesting that I don't think I could fire up VA Smalltalk and load a package to add brace constructors.
Yeah, but that'd be because the compiler is not, at least up until recently, and I don't know if the latest versions fixed this, but up until recently, the compiler wasn't fully public in VA, right?
No, I think the reason that it... No, it's always been public. No, the thing that you couldn't do was package it with your executable. I think the difference is that VisualWorks has always been a nexus between the different small talks. Somehow it's sort of a focal point of porting. Like, you get a lot of stuff made in the Squeak world, a lot. And a lot of that gets ported to VisualWorks. And things have been made in Visual Age, a lot of that got ported to VisualWorks. Plenty of projects got ported from Visual Age to VisualWorks over the years. So VisualWorks is a bit of a focal point for porting code. I think that's why we've got these different packages to modify things like
that. Yeah, okay. Well, I think unless you have anything else to say about Brace Constructor, I think we're pretty much done with that one. Which one of these did you want to go to next?
You can't ask me a question and then skip on to the next bit.
Okay.
Something else to add. Yeah, I think I would not recommend adding this syntax to Smalltalk.
Okay, so you said it does what it does pretty well, but you wouldn't recommend adding it.
Right, and you know, if anything, I would replace the static array literals with this if I were going to do anything. But if I were going to do anything beyond that, I would actually go and add more features to the language, like multiple assignment.
Okay, so what you mean is that if you wanted to use this at all, you'd say instead of using pound, the hash sign, parenthesis, you'd switch the syntax over to this rather than support both.
Yeah, I mean, I guess at this point, if you're talking about, okay, trying to solve some sort of syntactical problem here and making things nicer for the programmer, then you may as well take a step back and actually look at the whole problem, not just include extra syntax to solve one particular facet. So I wouldn't recommend adding this to Smalltalk. So I disagree with it being in Squeak. Just as I disagree as much about having the extra syntax for namespaces in VisualWorks. So it's not that I'm being biased or anything.
Well, the namespace thing, we've covered that story before. We did that probably too early. We probably should have thought more about it.
What do you mean? Oh, not our discussion, actually having namespaces, right.
I mean, back when it was done, it probably should have engendered a longer discussion before it was implemented. It's always felt to me, and this is probably not completely accurate, but it's always felt to me like it was kind of tossed in instead of really discussed.
Maybe. Before my time on the engineering team. So do you want to go to bear behavior thing, since you brought that up?
Talk about bear behavior. It's a package you created, so what problem is this guy trying to solve?
It's not trying to solve a problem, more like create a problem. No, that's not true.
You want to leave creating problems to me. I'm good at that.
Well, we have a class called behavior in Smalltalk, and there is nothing underneath it except object. So answer me this question. What is the absolute bare minimum set of behavior you need to have working objects in VisualWorks? The answer is this class right here, bare behavior. And this package, it's one class, bare behavior. These are the absolute minimum number of things you must have that you can execute without the VM exploiting on you.
Okay, so if you were going to, and I'm not saying that you'd necessarily do this, but if you were going to design a new Smalltalk hierarchy from scratch, you might start with this as your kernel instead of what's there now.
Well, not necessarily. I mean, you could start with this as an understanding of what is it that do I absolutely have to have to make my proxy object, for example. So, that, okay. You know, this bare behavior allows you to instantiate new objects and put on them whatever method dictionary you want. And the method dictionary starts off with a copy of all the behavior on bear behavior. So it's sort of cyclical in that respect, which is not Smalltalk. Smalltalk keeps the class and the instance side separate. But yeah, this is the absolute minimum you need to have an object instantiated that you can't inspect it. Don't, if you try to inspect it, you'll end up calling methods that then crash in really nasty, horrible ways. But you can install behavior on it and run the behavior, and things are okay.
And it is pretty bare bones. I mean, there's not actually even all that much Smalltalk code in this class. A bunch of these methods are just the primitives that you absolutely need to run down to.
That's right. That's what it is. It's the absolute bare behavior. I mean, technically, you don't even need the method output stuff. But you do need some way of setting up a method dictionary.
Yeah, and that actually is Smalltalk code, which I find interesting, that setting up the method dictionary is Smalltalk code, not some primitive.
Yeah. Well, it's just an instance of a class that has a particular shape that the VM understands.
Right. It's just interesting that seemingly basic behavior is still Smalltalk, so it's an interesting thing to me.
Yeah. Well, I mean, the method dictionary is a keyed collection, so it's literally a pointer slot list, and each pointer is a key value pointer set. So it's something that the VM can optimize over very easily.
Okay. So basically, even though you're writing Smalltalk code here, you're pretty much writing down to the bare metal of the VM. Well, as bare metal-ish as the VM gets, I suppose.
Yep. I mean, there are three instance variables that are absolute musts. You must, and they must be in this order, superclass, method, dict, and format. And they have to be in that order. That's something that the VM expects. So yeah, if you assume that the virtual machine is a real piece of hardware, then this is sort of like what you absolutely must have to make anything work. I mean, you compare it to the actual behavior class, if you want, and you'll see just how much stuff has ended up on behavior that doesn't need to be there.
Now a short interlude for this week's Squeak News with Randall Schwartz.
This is Randall Schwartz here with your latest Squeak News. You can find all this news and more at news.squeak.org. Luke Fabrice invites all Smalltalkers to submit your Smalltalk-based software to the 7th ESUG Innovation Technology Awards. The top three teams with the most innovative software will receive, respectively, €500, €300, and €200 during an awards ceremony at the 18th International Smalltalk Joint Conference 2010 in Barcelona, Spain. No constraints are put on the software except that it should be Smalltalk-based or Smalltalk-related, and all flavors of Smalltalk are accepted. Last year's entries included student projects, one-man labors of love, and full commercial applications. Don't forget that early registrations for the conference are only open for another month. You can register at registration.esog.org, running on Seaside. The server comes with new features. You can now do a group registration and make a single payment. It also allows you to book and pay for reduction tickets, typically for Golden and Platinum sponsors. The ESUG 2010 conference preliminary schedule is available at esug.org/conferences/2010. For Squeak Weekly News, this is Randall Schwartz. You can also check out my Smalltalk-related blog at methodsandmessages.vox.com.
And now, back to the regular podcast. Well, you could make the same argument about class object. I mean, if you look at class object, it's like it's a funny farm of methods. But yes, I'm looking at behavior now, and I see immediately an overridden method from something. I don't even know what. This is from store. For some reason, store added, overloaded add to super. Who knows why? But yeah, there's a whole ton more methods in here. I mean, I'm scrolling down and I've just barely gotten to the B's. So there's like, I think in bear behavior, I could probably count these. There's in the refactoring browser window that you open up, you have to scroll once. You have to hit the mouse wheel once to get to the bottom of all the methods. Whereas if you go over to behavior, you got to scroll quite a ways. There's a ton of methods in here. And a lot of these are just conveniences. I mean, things like with all subclass. I mean, it's not that that's not a useful method, but like you were saying about bare behavior, it's not an essential method. It's just a useful method.
Right. So this is an academic exercise, this package. I think it's useful for educating people on what's really going on underneath the hood. And this sort of leads on to the next package, which is I am my own class.
I am my own class. Okay, you didn't list that one for me.
No, okay. Well, you load it up. It's tiny as well.
Yeah. Okay. I'm loading it now.
No, I was doing the... whatever.
I am... there we go. And it's got a nice package comment.
Does it?
Okay, maybe a publish comment.
Holy crap, it actually does have a package comment.
Yes.
Oh. Something... are you sure I made this?
If you don't like documentation, you could work on the project I'm working on right now. You won't find any. Let's see. So I am my own class. Well, this is intro. Okay, so this actually uses bear behavior and then adds, what is it? Looks like it adds...
A method.
That's the create method.
So what it does is it's cute. It adopts itself as its own instance.
Oh. That's the name.
Yeah. So you can put methods on... you've got a method dictionary on yourself. And if you add methods to that method dictionary... then you can call those methods on yourself now.
So I see, yeah, I see what you're doing here. Object adopt instance object.
So it's a peculiar little thing in that a class can be anything, any object you want. So it may as well be itself. So long as the object in question has the same format as a class, which a bear behavior does.
And interestingly enough, the package comment is longer and more involved than the code.
The code, that's right. So this was an interesting exercise, I thought, as well, in sort of demonstrating how you can genesis the entire Smalltalk system from nothing. You know, from here you could build up the class instance separation, you can build up the entire class library however you want. You don't have to agree with anything that pre-exists if you really wanted to start.
So you could build like a little VisualWorks inside VisualWorks using this.
Yeah, you can build a whole replacement for everything. It doesn't even have to be Smalltalk. You know, you can implement Ruby like this.
Right.
And of course, the trick is the parsers.
And sort of like brace constructor, in a sense, you have an example here in the package comments so that if you wondered what it did, you do get an example so you can see an example of what it's trying to do.
Yeah, I mean, in the example, I implement yourself. And I do that by copying the yourself method from object.
Right. Yeah.
I just take objects yourself and stick it on the new class that is itself its own class.
Yep. I see that. So you just grab the compiled method at yourself from the from objects method dictionary and then stuff it in there.
Yep.
Yep. Okay.
It's reuse.
Well, but it's kind of interesting that you can do that. That's one of the things that if you take somebody that's familiar with languages like C++ or Java, this is probably the sort of thing that blows their mind.
Maybe. I mean, it depends. Once you understand how it all works under the hood, there's nothing terribly mind-blowing about it. But I did all of this as a kind of demonstration and introductory to the root metaprogramming that's really going on under the hood. You know, I've seen plenty of packages that implement objects that you can add methods to and objects that have flexible shapes and all that kind of stuff, but I'd never seen any packages that sort of lay out in absolute bare detail what is the minimum required to do this stuff. So that's why these two packages exist. And maybe they'll be useful for educational purposes at some point.
Right, and next you could implement something like minimal object and show exactly how little you need in class object because...
Well, no, that's there, right? So if you go back to bear behavior and you look at new method dictionary, methods,
that would be the bare minimum that you need.
That's the bare minimum, yep. Okay, I think we've done enough with bear behavior and I am my own class.
Which one did you want to cover next?
Well, let's do one of the bigger ones. Let's go on to ray tracing.
Okay, and ray tracing, you're going to have to cover most of this because this is the sort of graphic stuff that I'm not that familiar with.
All right, this is by our good friend David Buck.
Yeah, no, I know who it's by. I just, graphics is not one of my areas of expertise, that's all.
Okay, well, this is a really... inefficient ray tracer. This is sort of like PovRay's approach, which is no surprise since PovRay comes from David Buck. He was the genesis of all that stuff. So what it does is you set up your 3D scene. You have inside the scene you have various 3D objects, and in this case the geometric shapes. You've got planes and spheres, and the geometric shapes have textures. And those textures have finishes, so you can have shiny finish on a wooden texture. And the idea is that when light hits it, it will look like wood. So then you add a camera to the scene, and the camera represents a way to look at the world, which literally means the image you're going to produce. So with ray tracing, for each individual pixel that you're going to display on the screen, you shoot it at all the objects in the scene, and the object that is closest to the camera, that touches it first, in other words, is the one that is going to emit the light. Now, this is not, I stress, not the best way to do ray tracing. It is just probably the simplest way to do it.
So, it's a way that a beginning person who didn't understand this, like, I don't know, say me, could look at and maybe get a grasp of what's going on.
Right. So, I mean, it's really straightforward code, I think, once you understand what it's doing. It's a really good introductory to ray tracing. It probably could do with more commenting, but the places that are really useful with intersections with into, all the math is actually written out in the comment, explaining the derivatives that are used to do the intersection formulas for spheres and planes with array. And then you see that then transformed into Smalltalk code. And I think that's really good. I think that's really
nice. So you could treat this as teaching code, where you're trying to learn this subject, and you could take this, even though, like you said, it's not the most optimal way to do it, but you can see the principles behind everything.
Yeah, I mean, I kind of wish there was more here, like the Phong lighting model. The Phong lighting model is super common in 3D graphics. It's an approximation of the properties of light in most objects. And the way that it's put together by the guy, Phong, is really useful. And the formulas that are used are well understood. And it would be nice if that had been written out in full, describing the way that the color at a particular pixel is derived. And of course, there's an example here that creates a chessboard with two spheres on it. I think it's two spheres. And it gives you a runtime, which is slow, runs for 5 seconds for me.
And that's on fairly decent hardware you've got there.
Yeah, I mean, so yeah, this is kind of a neat example. The resolution is awful. Just to kind of clarify the difference between POVRay technology and what you're playing with here, this is bare minimum basic stuff. So
this is to ray tracing what maybe bare behavior is to behavior.
Yeah, I mean, this is a fantastic introduction to ray tracing. If you really wanted to get in there and understand how to do the absolute basics of it and have something that works that you can screw around with, go in there, change the formulas, and play with it, this is your guy.
And then from here, you could probably find some material that explained this stuff, and then you could maybe start graduating to the way people actually do it now.
Yep. There's a lot of light theory involved in ray tracing, and there are actual errors in the rendering of this scene for anybody who's interested in figuring those out. Go for it. Have fun.
Okay. Well, that sounds cool, and like you said, Dave is well known for the ray tracing stuff.
Yeah, I thought it was neat. I should point out that the ray tracing package starts with a funny little arrow character, so if you're looking for it in public store, don't look under R. Look at the very top of the package list, so right under the bottom of all the bundles.
Yeah.
At the top of the A's.
Yeah.
That's another one. So you won't find it unless you're looking in the right spot. Curse you, Travis!
All right. So what did you want to cover next?
No, it's your turn. You go choose, Neil.
Okay. Well, what about this block pipeline thing?
Okay. So begin. Talk.
Well, I've just loaded it, and let me close this browser. It's got everything expanded, so let me go down to where that actually is. And it says in the comment that this allows you to link a sequence of two argument blocks and execute them in parallel. So I guess the idea is that you'd have a couple of different things that you'd want to execute cooperatively in a way and get them both going at the same time.
Yeah, I mean, this is sort of like a Unix... the Unix pipe, really.
Right. So it's just like using a pipe in Unix.
Yeah. So each block has an in variable and an out variable. I think maybe it would be cute if the two ends of this pipeline were blocks themselves. Could be worth a rewrite.
And actually, I can see where this would be useful, because I know that on the command line, I do this kind of thing all the time. You know, as I'm looking at log files from our web server to analyze what traffic patterns are looking like, it's quite common for me to take the log that spans maybe 2 or 3 months' worth of data and say, let me cat the log file, pipe it through grep for the month so that I can pull out just the stuff I'm looking for so that I don't have to parse all of it in Smalltalk. And having that same capability inside Smalltalk for doing things with blocks sounds kind of cool.
Maybe.
Well, I don't know how useful it'd be. It's not like it's something I've ever looked for, but it sounds
cool. Well, it was interesting because we tried to implement this pattern with extremes, Martin and I. And we came to the conclusion that when you say encoding, then the act of saying encoding is essentially like piping. So instead of doing pipe, command, you do command, command, command. And it's implied because it streams that it's piped. So in terms of whether this stuff is that useful, I think we've gone beyond that metaphor already.
And it kind of hints at what you just said if you look at the limitations in the comment. You talk about how you should replace the shared queue with some kind of circular buffer.
Oh, right, yeah. I mean, yeah, that's all stuff that's under the hood in extremes.
Right, so that's what I mean. You've already gone to that. You've already taken the limitation and learned from this package, as it were, when you did extremes.
Yeah, I didn't actually realize this package existed when we did extremes, and Martin never brought it up, so I guess... I think it's kind of neat. I like it. I like its simplicity. I like anything that's tiny and implements a new concept.
Well, yeah, it's two classes plus an extension onto block closure. I mean, it's very
small.
Yeah,
and it's the pipe symbol, right? So you got right. Block, pipe, block.
Right.
That's great.
As far as using it, it's trivial. You use it exactly from a syntactic standpoint. You'd use it just like you'd use Unix piping.
I think there are probably limitations in how much data you can push through on the in and out. For example, if the second block tries to read more than is available in the first block.
Yeah.
Basically, each one of these pipe symbols that you create creates another process. So you've got a process basically sitting there waiting on semaphores for data to come through.
Right. One thing it does demonstrate, though, is that to try this kind of experiment in Smalltalk doesn't take a lot of time or effort, because this is not that much code. I mean, if you look at it, there's... What, it's one screen of, you know, one box of methods in block pipeline, and in finite shared queue, it's three methods. So it's what, three and what, three, six, seven, eight. So 12 methods total. I'd have to look at the class side to see if there are any there, but yeah, 13 methods.
Yep.
So, you know, you can wrap your head around this pretty easy.
This is bizarre. This is what, the 1, 2, 3, 4th package in a row that's had comments. This is like the opposite of what happened last week when nothing had comments at all.
Yeah, last week we looked at a bunch of stuff where we had to say, well, if you want to wrap your head around this, you're going to have to do it the old-fashioned way. Grab the code and ponder. And this stuff comes with actual honest-to-goodness examples. I mean, all of it does. Like this package, you look in here, and right here, this package is used like this, and there's an example right there.
Yeah, I'm in class, game with examples. Maybe you haven't had examples. The ray tracer had an example. But right. What's going on here? This isn't small talk.
This is not the language that tells people you don't need no stinking comments.
Right. Okay, so let's move on.
And now a short break for this week's Smalltalk Jobs Report.
I'm James T. Savage, and this is the Smalltalk Jobs Report. Please excuse the sound of my voice. After two nights here at the Wimberley, Texas 4th of July Rodeo, my voice has gone a little rough. Sydney, Australia. Sandstone Technology has a permanent position for a senior software developer who knows Smalltalk or has a willingness to learn Smalltalk, has experience with OOAD, HTML, Java, JavaScript, CSS, database design and management, analyzing logs and memory dumps, Tomcat, Microsoft Windows, Linux, and has excellent communication skills. It is considered a plus if you have experience with SQL Server, JBoss SIEM framework, and web services. New York, New York. Shelby Jennings is looking for a Smalltalk developer who also has experience with Java, C++, OO design, front office experience. It is considered a plus if you have financial derivatives interest or experience. This permanent position pays $120,000 plus significant bonus package per year. The jobs listed in this report are just a few examples of the Smalltalk positions that are currently open across the world. For more details, visit our public directory page at xrl.us/smalltalkjobs or read my blog, Message Sends with an Undefined Object. Good luck with your job hunting.
If you enjoyed this week's podcast, please tell other people about it. We'd love to have more Smalltalkers and more developers learning about Smalltalk through the Industry Misinterpretations podcast. If you have feedback, send it to smalltalkpodcasts@syncom.com. Head on over to Facebook, join the Industry Misinterpretations group. Head on over to Ning and join the Smalltalkers group. Or head on over to Podcast Alley and cast a vote for the podcast. In the meantime, have fun with Smalltalk. And I also loaded all the code into the into an image, except a brace constructor, because I know what that does, and I also know that it breaks the refactoring browser to some extent.
Well, why don't we start with brace constructor then? Well, let's just get on with it then, huh?
All right. Well, let's start with brace.
Tell us what you think of the brace constructor, James.
That's all right. You're truly a bastard.